I'm glad that Mr. Randall put it in writing. Go. He's very lavish there at Point, and we can go back to it. It's a typewritten script. If we want to bring anything up against him, it'll be a little more definite than some of the things on far horizons that Joe McCarthy thinks that he sees. It's rather deeply moving to be here tonight. We're all just a lot of suckers. If it were not that it was so credible a witness, as Henry Villard, the correspondent of the New York Herald, later put in high responsible positions with relation to finance. It wasn't Henry Villard that said that when he was under a boxcar with Lincoln in a rain. He was, as his ears registered to it, Lincoln said, "Just think of a sucker like me being president." Here we are on these prairies. That a century and a half ago knew no human life but the sparse one of the red man. Connecting with this strange rise of population and of the American experiment by way of a republic and a democracy, the slow rise from those 3 million people clutching to the Atlantic coast in the 1770s, on now to 150 million people. A friend of mine in the Department of State was telling me a while ago that before that war in the 1860s, the Department of State, in its treaties with foreign nations, used to write it, "The United States are." But after that war, they always wrote it, "The United States is." It's because we became a world power out of many strange, involved conditions. Out of various hours of despair, a Union general in April of 1864 saying, "May God save my country. If there is a God and if I have a country." Always there have been doubters and deniers and mockers. Always there have been those crying their negatives. And always there has been a living, vital remnant that was affirmative. I tried in that novel, Remembrance Rock, to get something that's impossible to get said. You can only approximate it. You can't point to words, but you can point to deeds. I did that novel remembrance rock, having in mind constantly. A score and more of men that I have known close, who had a feeling about this country. They didn't exactly like to be called patriots, because there are so many specimens of loudmouth stuffed shirts who are sure they are patriots and can teach patriotism by word of mouth. These men, I can think of one of them. He was in the First World War, came out the end of that war as a colonel in charge of 1,000 men who were photographing the sector opposite the American troops every day. He was 62 when he offered his services in the Second World War, and went into the Navy, and came out of the war a captain in charge of 2,000 men doing combat photography, Air Force combat photography. I think of a friend of mine on the shore of Lake Michigan, a near neighbor. He was a flyer in the Lafayette Escadrille in late 1916, going with an American outfit when we went into the war. Being in two different crack-ups, one of them doing something to his larynx, and the other one breaking his nose. He sat by a radio set on D-Day, there in 1944, when the landings were being made in Normandy on Utah and Omaha beaches, a landing the like of which was never known in history before. And I saw his eyes moist, and I said to him, "What's the matter, Ken?" And he said, "I feel so useless." Well, they've always been there in every crisis. No man knows to a certainty who knows history whether they will be there in the next crisis, but always there has been that living, modest remnant of men who don't go around gabby about their patriotism and their services. Most of them rather silent men. You can ask them many questions where the answer is there's nothing to be said. Just now, you might say, there are those who say it's about 5 minutes to midnight. Senator McMahon of Connecticut has said it's perhaps an hour to midnight. Dave Lilienthal is more optimistic, says it's about 11 a.m. But we've got to be thinking and we've got to be working. The parallel of what Lincoln had to face when he was elected, the parallel is in that, just like Lincoln, there are no precedents to guide us. There are no documents out of the past, no situations in the past that will give us concrete instructions on what to do now. As to what to do about the B-36 or Formosa. Formosa. Senator Taft says, move in, take it over. Atchison and Truman says, no, wait, we'll let the dust settle. There are 450 million people. And there's a curious revolution has been going on there for more than 15 years. You might say it started with Sun Yat-sen. All the Chinamen I ever saw as a boy had bald heads, their heads shaved in a long pigtail running down to the end of the spine. And that style is gone. It went with autocratic Empire China. Even their clothing in the main, particularly in all the large cities, has changed. They began on an experiment in democracy, and an army, a people's army, began moving. Along in the 1930s, the Eighth Rout Army. Edgar Snow wrote one book about it. Jack Belden has written another one. They felt that it was an army somewhat on the order of George Washington's Continental Army and the military forces of Marion the Swamp Fox in the Carolinas. It's quite likely the army had changed somewhat in its viewpoint as political situations changed. The extent to which it was helped by and today is dominated by the Kremlin can't be told now with any absolute accuracy. A very curious division in the United Nations. Great Britain and an alignment of nations having recognized the new government there in China. While we are holding off, I am no authority. I haven't been over there. I haven't read a sufficiency of documents and reports. I don't know. I sort of go along with the sentiment of letting the dust settle. Before we try to put over a Marshall Plan across that vast continent of Asia, we're having enough complications with our Marshall Plan in Europe. I don't know. The communists at times are terrible gamblers. They will put on terrible adventures. The Battle of Stalingrad is one of the supreme classics in the art of warfare. The town was battered to pieces and taken away from them. And by night they came over across the Volga River and fought hand to hand in the dark. And little by little took away that city from the Nazis. And little by little with the encircling armies that they had, they forced the surrender of an army of 300,000 Germans. And they have a police state that denies everything there is in the theories of democracy. They are practicing cruelties upon how many millions of people in the slave labor camps, we don't know. Something desolate about the state of the arts and the sciences. Something desolate and barren. Something hard to look at from a man who understands, from anyone who understands the theory of free speech and a free press, where you're free to shoot off your mouth with any darn fool thing that comes to your idle brain. John J. McCloy, running the works over in Berlin, on his arrival, having sent out 5,000 civilians, wanting only the military to run affairs. McCloy is worried. What kind of a show those commies are planning to put on with their army of 500,000, their forces of 500,000 German youth that they've organized in street for street fighting. And for guerrilla warfare, so that they will be able, they think, to put the responsibility on the other side for firing in return on their forces. No precedent to guide us. A very curious little sentence from Lincoln that John Hay put in his diary along in May of 1861. Lincoln saying, "My policy is to have no policy. My policy is to have no policy."